is the weather there in Canada today?
It's chilly. We're the coldest place on the earth right now, I think.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. And Australia is the hottest place on earth.
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately. I know.
That's bothering me. Yeah. But what's not bothering me is you. Good morning, beautiful. Hello, brains. How are you today? We are back here on The Edge with April Mahoney with a wonderful guest from the Healing Heart Center there in Canada. Her name is Hazel Butterworth. That sounds like the name of a really good children's novel, you know, author. Hazel Butterworth.
Yeah. What's interesting, people have actually come to me because they like my name.
Of course, but your name is indicative with your work because you are a teacher and you are an educator, you're an illustrator, you're a Reiki healer, you're a cancer survivor, and you are a part of a wonderful co-op community of people that are looking to heal in different modalities. And so I want to welcome you to The Edge to explore all of these wonderful things inside your brain and share with my brains. Good morning, Hazel Butterworth. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. A little chilly, but good.
Well, yeah. You know, chilly is good. Chilly is good. So start with your humble beginnings growing up in England and then moving to Canada. Tell us what your life was like.
Okay. Very modest. Very modest. Two siblings. Lots of aunts and uncles on both sides of the family. So had a very strong family unit growing up. Had lots of friends. Still have friends from primary school, from kindergarten, still connected, which is wonderful. But it was very modest, and you don't realize that as a child because that's the only world you know. So part of that was living in England, very much the class system, and growing up very modest, we learned very quickly the haves and the have-nots. So we kind of fell in the have-nots to a degree. But, you know, it was happy. It was wonderful times. Even though we didn't have holidays abroad, we had holidays local. So we still had our vacations. We still had, but it just looked different. And that's all it was, really. But growing up in England with that, it's very much about labels and finding where you fit in, which is similar, like ego's the same, right? Right. So my first identity crisis was when I was about 11 or 12. And I went to the academic school. So I was the first female, the first girl to go to the academic school.
Well, and wait. Separate that for us because our American brains don't understand the difference between the schools.
Okay. In England, it kind of divides into the more academic are the ones likely to go on to further education, university. The second, what they used to call secondary school, which they changed to comprehensive, are the more skilled people. So they kind of split you into academics or the skill set.
When you say skilled, you mean more like laborers, more like construction plumbers.
Yeah. Yes. Those that weren't going to go to university, right? Primarily, yes.
So from the onset, when you're a child, your parents assess that, or they assess that through, you know, testing or whatever. They can see if you're strong.
You have testing. When you're 11, you're graded then, and that determines which school you go to.
Wow.
So you are, yeah.
It's still like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, the school system everywhere has not kept up with the times. And
my father told me years ago, he said, we raising educated fools. They're going to send you to school to learn nothing. And I see that happening all the time. But I had no idea that you would be tested and then you would be split off as to what school. I mean, is there an opportunity for you to, you know, really excel in, you know, in the secondary type of school and then be born into the academic?
Yeah, absolutely. You can. And then within a year, they reassess you. But then there's just those who, it depends when your learning curve hits. And some aren't ready at 10 or 11. Some have a later learning curve. And I have a friend who it wasn't till her 30s that she got her thirst for knowledge. So, you know, it's not always a true window of your abilities at 11 years of age.
I think that's pretty tough. It's pretty unfair that you have an opportunity, you know, and I don't know how that works with regards to gender. Are there more girls, you know, or boys? You know, because boys sometimes, I love you boys, but you don't test as strong as girls do. So I, you know, That's very interesting. So with that, you wanted to be a teacher. So tell us about that.
Okay, wanting to be a teacher, that was something I knew as young as five. When I first went to school, I loved it and made that decision. I had that knowing, which is now what I teach about, that inner knowing that you don't explain, but you just know. Right. So I always knew I'd be a teacher, so I never questioned what would you be when I grow up, because it was easy to teach. And so I didn't stop to think that if I didn't get my qualifications, what would be plan B? So I had to resit a couple of exams, but I got in. But going back to when I was 11, when I first went to that school, I made new friends. And that first identity crisis was they discovered where I lived. And so they dropped me like a hot potato.
What?
So, yeah, it was a brutal, so that was my teenage years, is years where trying to find out who am I and where do I fit? Because some people don't think I'm good enough. And some people had the opposite, thinking, well, you've gone to the academic school. So I had both extremes of how people saw me. So learning from an early age, how people see you doesn't necessarily define you, but I didn't have those skills then. And when I went through my teacher training, part of that 3 years there was actually self-discovery, because that was the first time I could say, I got there because of who I am, not because of what people think about me. Right. So I must have means to get there, right?
And I say this with love, because I love you out of London. I always have to say a disclaimer, because folks get so crunchy. You say anything, they can misconstrue it. But there is a certain classism that's, in England and in Europe. Always have been, from monarchy on down. And so you say that you weren't privileged. Were you impoverished? That's a big difference.
No.
Okay.
No.
So you were, were you in a class of being underserved and overlooked? Or you just didn't have some of the things that your counterparts grew up with?
We didn't have the material things.
Okay.
Where I grew up opposite the school, I had my friends, we had a wonderful play area, we grew up together, we went through the brownies, we went through the guides, we had that companionship, had all of that that money doesn't buy.
No.
But we didn't have the material things. We were lucky to have a car because my dad loved to drive, and so we always went for drives on the weekend, picnics and that. So there were things that we were doing that we had that weren't necessarily the monetary. So we were very rich in that sense, but materialistic wise, we lived in a rental house, so we didn't own our own house. So that was considered that we weren't as good. So lots of different things came into play. And that plays on your mind and how, kind of.
Oh, sure. And how you perceive the world and others around you. So how did that help you when you became a teacher, an academic teacher? How did that experience teach you to be more empathetic and caring and incorporate that in the children that you taught?
It's very much just what you said. Because you've experienced it, then you have a better comprehension and a more compassion. So because you've been there and seen that and experienced it, you know what it looks and feels like. So you ensure that you don't treat anybody else that same way.
Right. And that's so important. With bullying that's going on all over the world, be it an adult or be it a child, these things create trauma. A lot of times we don't want to talk about them, so we suppress them. And then that manifests into so many other things, disease, depression, bad relationships, lack of self-confidence, all of those things. Now you do something very interesting on your Facebook page. Brains, I want you to go check it out. She's the business, okay? She illustrates thought processes, ideas, metaphors. And I asked her, I said, do you hand sketch these? I want you to check them out. They're maybe 15, 16, 17 seconds, but they are so powerful and enlightening. Do you have one there? I saw you reach down. Do you have one there?
Well, it's just my sketching now has gone into these type of things. So
okay,
this is
so wait, don't shake it because I want them to see it. Pull it up and let us see it. Okay. Okay. So it says possible showers. What did it say? Wait a minute.
That's possible showers. It says, I feel sad. I want to hide. She's hiding under the umbrella.
And they're so colorful. Now, what grade did you teach?
11 to 18 year olds, so the seniors. But through our teaching, we actually go through the, we start with the primary, the kindergarten, then we teach the middle age, and then we teach the seniors. So
it's so different. Yeah. It is so different. What is the school system like? Do they pour a lot of money into education?
They do, but like everywhere else, it's difficult for change, right? It takes so much, because it's very much the old system. The only way they can measure you is through your exam system, and that's not always a fair assessment. You know, it doesn't, it's, they're struggling the same as we are in Canada and the States. The funding isn't there, right?
You know, and teachers should get paid what doctors and lawyers, and cut back on some of these governmental people, you know, because really you are the fiber and the glue to the future. If these kids can read and write and you take the time to, you know, mold them, you're their secondary parent. I remember my teachers. It was once upon a time when I was in school, my teacher would give me a hug. Oh my God, that was better than a bowl of ice cream because I made you proud, you know. Yeah. There was a sense of accomplishment. Now, if you say anything to a person's child, you're at the headmaster's office, you know, being reprimanded.
Yes. So, but the children have a different power from when I, even when I was teaching, and if it, you know, different ways of working with the children. If today it's become so politically sensitive that you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't do this, you can't do that. The schools are difficult to be all inclusive when there's so many different backgrounds and there's so many children coming from different backgrounds and sometimes don't even speak the language. I know one school in Britain had like 60 different languages. How do you teach one class with 60 dialects and different cultures, and you're trying to teach one concept to all of these children at the one time? And then the all inclusive, one of the struggles that the teachers are having now is the all inclusive. So little Johnny could be a grade 4 reader and little Abby could be only a grade 2, but they're in the same class. So how do you tailor your class for those children? The people who, you know, kids who can read really well and the kids who can't read, they're in the same class. It's a bigger challenge than it used to be.
It is a huge challenge. So you've taken all this, you've pulled your skills and talents together, and you went through a big tragedy, a trauma, a realization of your own. You are a cancer survivor. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Okay, yeah, sure. Everything along the way, all our experiences, right? I mean, you mentioned before about how we store emotions. And that's one of the biggest things that for the children that's missing. Is the not, that's why that book with the little girl and the umbrella, that book is going to be published through Balboa Press. It's called Weather Your Emotions, and it's specifically about being able to express your emotions. There's no such thing as a good or bad. It's an experience, and it is how you feel in this moment. So it's to encourage children and parents and teachers and students to have that window, to have the opportunity to learn to express emotion. If we don't harness it, if we don't work with it, if we don't process it, as you mentioned before, it begins to store in our body. It's just an energy. And then that becomes quite toxic. We know when we say we're sick with worry, that's a true thing. Right. And so I, you know, surprise, surprise, had a medical, got a diagnosis of cancer, and was a big surprise because of the work I do. But nevertheless, I too have stored emotions along the way. Yes. So for me, that was one of my wake-up calls where it was like I needed to be, it's like you're on a route and you need to be here, but you're only here. So very often we get these big challenges and then now we focus on it and we pay 100% attention because cancer is not a pleasant word to hear, right? Right. So, but it encourages you to take a really good look at yourself. So for me, I didn't tell anybody. I just kept it very within a very small framework of people. I chose who I wanted on my team and worked with that. But most of it was self-journey. And when I explored, the emotion that was trapped in there was rejection. So I explored that rejection, but I do it three ways. How have I rejected other people? Maybe their ideas or their thoughts, or just rejected them and or been unkind to them. The second one, which was the easiest, how have people rejected me? Because remember, I grew up getting rejected. So that stored all that, right? And then the third one, which is the most important, is how have I rejected myself? So there's three ways that that goes. It goes out, it comes in, and it's within yourself.
Wow.
So it took me a few months. So I had my medical in the March. I had a diagnosis in April. They had me scheduled for surgery in the May. And I said, no, sorry. I need time to process and sit with this before I make a decision. And right. They were totally surprised. They said, well, most people say get it out. And I said,
right.
Yeah. I'm not your average person. And I knew energetically that it had taken a long time to get there. And I knew that that was the route I had to go. So I had a very interesting homeopath who asked me a question because I had to make the decision, do I have surgery? And he asked the question, am I at peace with that? And that was a really good question because I embraced my surgery. I embraced the whole experience, which is totally different from the average person.
Right. And totally I did. They don't want it. They set those walls up.
Yes, they hate it, they fight it, they resist it. And I just said, well, okay, this is presented. This is a huge opportunity for me to look at myself, go within. And I did self-journey. I engaged a few friends who do different modalities just to get a deeper understanding or a different perspective. So I went into my records. I had someone who's very much an intuitive and got some clues from them. And then I did my journey. And by the time my surgery came, I was at peace with having that part of me removed. I don't feel I've lost anything. I'm still complete. By the time the surgery came, it was almost gone.
Wow.
But I asked the question, the doctor said, well, you can't put it back in. I have to make a decision and be okay with you taking it out. And I said, what if it under when you take it out, when you get this and it's all clear? Do you not do the surgery? And they said, no, we still do the surgery because we won't know until it's under the microscope.
Right.
So, yeah, I was at peace with that. I embraced it. I had an amazing, never been in hospital before, my first overnight in hospital. And it was a very surreal experience. I even woke up with a picture at the bottom of the bed that was like a rainbow. So I woke up to a rainbow.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You've taken all of this experience and now you are pouring it into others as a Reiki master. Explain to my brains, I know what Reiki is. I get it done, you know. And brains know that these people I have on my show, I make an investment in them. I know what they do. I understand it. I have been on their table or acupuncture or, you know, I let people reveal certain personal things when they do readings or whatever. So know that these people are really doing something that I have tried personally. I encourage you to try. If you're currently under a doctor's care, I want you to stay under that doctor's care, but understand that there's other modalities and there's other ways of doing things that have been around for centuries. Okay.
Absolutely.
Before injections and before pills and before cutting it out, all of these things. So you got to get your mind around this and you've got to move the energy. So can you explain to us, please, Hazel, what is Reiki?
Okay. It's more than just the table work. So how I teach Reiki is very much, Reiki teaches you how to live in the day. It's just for today. Be in the day. It teaches you to live from heart. Like really, Reiki is your foundation within. So it teaches you to create just for today. Do not worry. Just for today. Be kind. Just for today, be without anger. Just be free of anger. Anger's going to pop up, but don't hang on to it, right? So it teaches, there's a philosophy behind Reiki, which is, I'd say, the priority. The table work is the bonus because it really, Reiki is about you. And I encourage everybody, if they have an opportunity, to learn it for themselves. The bonus is, yes, we can give sessions and we can share that with others. But it really teaches you to go within and to find those answers. A lot of people don't know about grounding or about being centered. It teaches you all that, but it teaches you mainly to be in this calm energy, right? So it doesn't matter what the world is presenting. It doesn't matter what is happening in this moment. You are empowered from here because things come, you process it, keep what you want and let the rest go. It's a wonderful process. But really, living to the heart. Yeah.
Very heart-centered. And the table work is amazing. You know,
it is.
When I had it done the first time, I was warned afterwards, of course.
Yeah. But
my friend that was there with me, she was like, you know, you have to be careful with this modality because there's energy thieves. You know, there are people there that can rob you of that, but you are open to receive things from the universe as well. So you want to trust your Reiki master facilitator, like you would air acupuncturist, like you, your primary medicine. This person is going deep within your soul, your, you know, your psyche, all of that. So you really need to, you know, check them out. Now, you do something else that's amazing. You deal with colors and color things. Tell us about that. I love it.
This, this is my first aid kit, right, is my color gels. It is a tuning fork, and it is Reiki. So I have Reiki color sound. So that's is good for me. Reiki and color sound, none of them are alternative. They're all complementary. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter if you're on medication. Doesn't matter who you're seeing. This will actually just enhance and complement. It helps to work with. So it's just, it's amazing. Yeah, color therapy helped me through my, it helps me a lot. But yeah, even just, if you don't have something physical, you can just imagine it. You can imagine breathing in that color.
Right.
So the things that I love to do with it that can be very simplistic, they're very effective, but they're very simplistic. In other words, I'm very much about what can you do for yourself? And most of that comes from your thoughts and your feelings, right? Your emotions and how you process that. So if we learn that this is our energy field, and as you mentioned before, yes, people say there's energy vampires and that, but if we stand strong and radiate and have a strong filtering system,
right.
We don't need to put up walls. We don't need to be afraid. It's because I have a strong filtering system. Only that which is, I programmed, only that which is from love and light can filter that. And if anything does get through, it's because it needs to get my attention and I need to take a look at it.
Right. So give us an example of color therapy. What happens when you do that with someone?
So if I give a Reiki session, I have a color lamp that I use, and it would have, I ask the body what color it needs. So it's intuitive. You can work logically and work from look at an ailment or look at a color and see what that does. Darius Dinshaw did all the science he died in 1966. And that's his science research that is the foundation of our color therapy. But you can, simply put, just lay a color, the colors you wear, right? It's funny, my colleague, as she said, that you met with Carmen, used to always wear black. And it,
right. She shared that with me on our interview.
Yeah, and now it's really colorful because it makes a difference. If you, I play in a band as well, and we volunteer at care centers. And sometimes when you go in the seniors' places, they're all very drab. Very drab, the gray, the beige, and it's not a pleasant environment. But we go to a day home for seniors, and everyone's in color, and it's a totally different experience. And the walls are colorful,
right?
Even the colors of your room, it's just literally affecting you. Whether you're wearing it, the colors you eat a rainbow. Whether it's you do visualization, but there's healing, there's medical properties of color. There's also your personality colors. You can do that. So color readings. You can do that. And as you say, your colors for your business. I taught a class at the university and in the media communications and how color is used in advertising. And when you look,
I just saw my guest yesterday. Yeah, she was absolutely amazing. You know, I want you two to connect. Absolutely. Because she did my colors for me and the colors that based off numerology. So put the numbers together, and then the numbers were indicative of a certain color, and there was a color on top, there was a color on the bottom, and then when she interpreted it, I couldn't believe it. I was like, at first, I was like, a little skeptical. I'm like, I don't know. And she read me like a cheap novel, girl, from cover to cover. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, so color therapy is very, very important, but again, that's why the universe provided it to us. You know?
And when you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, like that little part in the middle is visible light, and that's the rainbow, and that's the part in our physical world that we see, right? That visible light, because if it's not in the visible light, we don't see it. We don't see x-rays, we don't see gamma rays, but in the visible light, that rainbow, that is there all the time. We know it as white light, so we don't necessarily always see the colors. You'll see a rainbow, conditions are right.
Right.
So you know it exists, but so think about in terms of your body too, like all your chakras, there at the rainbow.
Absolutely. Right? And just like I have meditations, and Hazel, I see colors that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, and that is when, you know, it looks like have you seen one of those machines that check your brain waves?
Yeah.
Psychedelic colors. And I was like, wow. So I know at that point that I've made it, you know, that I'm connecting with source. I think that was really, really powerful. Tell us a little about your book.
I get purple when I'm in the zone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Your crown chakra. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your books, because I know that you're a wonderful author.
Okay, thank you. Well, there's several. The first one was called...
Do you have any of them there with you?
I have... this was the energy bubble.
Okay, and hold it. Give them a second so they can focus on it so they can go by it. Pull it up. All right, the energy bubble brains.
Yes. And that, again, is full of little drawings that you like. But it explains concepts. Here's how to feel energy. But it gives you activities as well. So the book is packed with activities. It's about being able to be sensory aware, for you to grow that sensory awareness, right? Your intuition, your gut instincts. There's one here that is the head, the heart, and the hara. And these centers, your thinking center, your feeling center, and then your gut instincts. That's important to have that communication between those, because a lot of people are just stuck in their heads. And it's like, there's no connection to their feelings and there's no gut instincts and we're ignoring our heart and our hara. So that's an important one. So that was the first book, because as I was teaching Reiki, I had to start explaining what is energy. And so that's how come that book was born, was to help Reiki students understand and how to sense energy, feel the energy of a plant, and then creative response, draw it, was a good one. The second book is an extension of that, and that's Empowering Moments. And that's explaining a lot of concepts, because what I find, there's so many modalities, there's so much out there, it's very confusing, very daunting. And so a lot of the research that I've done, a lot of the books that I've read, it's like bringing that information into everyday language. And here's a little concept, like Dr. Emoto with the water, and how science has proved now that thoughts and words have an effect and impact on water, and our body's mostly water. So when we say those words to people, then that's having an impact on that body too, even our thoughts to ourselves. So there's so many, lots of concepts explained. And then the third part of the book is little actions, kind of like those little videos that you had, but still pictures to explain some of those concepts. So that is the second book, which is about you empowering yourself in this moment. What can you do in this moment? Because people are stuck for how. They want to make change, but don't know how. So here's some concepts explained for you to understand. This is how we function. This is who we are. And then you can get a gist of those concepts to help you understand. And then you can start putting some things into motion.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, self-awareness and self-empowerment is really key.
And you've got illustrations, brains. What could be better than a picture?
Picture says 1,000 words, and that's what I find.
1,000 words, and it speaks volumes. And that is what you have done to our hearts and to our heads today. You have really raised the frequency, and I thank you so much. I'm just so excited about 2020 and all of the fantastic guests that I have this year. Again, we're talking about color therapy. We're talking about Reiki. Teachers. We love teachers. Illustrators. Innovators. They are the game changers. They are the influencers. Okay, of our children, and they are the shifters of us as adults in our life. Thank you so much for being here. Tell us how to get in contact with you if people are there and they want to visit. You know, I didn't get to see the whole center. I know that you and Carmen just moved into a brand new location. I got to get to Canada again. My passport is ready because I don't come there. You know, they say when you walk in the door, you feel it. You know, you feel the energy there. You feel the and I know the colors. I know you have it all tricked out. So tell my brains how to get to the Healing Heart Center there in Canada and how to get in contact with you.
Okay, we're actually in Alberta. We're Sherwood Park, Alberta. And the website is www.healingheartscenter.ca. And center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E. My email, Mrs. Hazel Butterworth @gmail.com. And you can get to, we have Facebook. We have also a new group that we've started, a movement called Ignite Peace Within. So we're just starting to grow that project right now. We also have on the website, you mentioned about the cancer before, there's actually a free ebook on our website. If you look under Cancer, You Are the Cure, and you can download that for free. And there's tips in there, there's help, some of the things that, suggestions, some of the things that I did for myself. Yeah, take a look at that. That's free. And then my book's available on my website too. It's on Healing Heart's website. So you can download the book. There's meditation on there that goes with the book to help you. And yeah, it's all there. And then can piggyback from there onto the Facebook. So,
and Brains, you know, the best part about it is that she's lived this. This is not something that she learned in academia. She walked the walk. So she's talking the talk from an authentic place. And I
thank you.
Thank you, Brains, for being here with us. I ask that you go and subscribe to my YouTube channel, On the Edge with April Mahoney. There's about 85 videos there of great stuff, just like this here. Spotify, Blog Talk, follow me on Facebook. I really love you. I enjoy you. I value you. And I thank you for coming here and being here on the edge. Hazel Butterworth, come back and visit me. Keep me informed. And Brains, go and check out these sketches. They're really, really cool. They'll make you think in a matter of 15, 16 seconds.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been exciting. I look forward to watching more of your videos. Awesome.
I'm coming to Canada. I'm coming. Okay.
Not right now. You need the boots.
Yeah. No, I need the warm weather. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye, Brains. Have a great day.